Hi, and welcome to Half-Wit History. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Kylie.
And this is a show where we talk about the upcoming week, but a long time ago.
And sometimes not so long ago.
Yeah. Do you have any updates, Kylie?
Not a one.
Nope, me neither. So it looks like we can get right into it.
Let's just dive on in.
Okay, so this is for the week of July 13th to July 19th. The topic is, on July 13th of 1871, the world's first championship cat show, organized by Harrison Weir, was held at Crystal Palace in London.
Ooh, cat show.
Kylie likes cats.
I love cats, and I'm so sad because we do not have a cat, but your mother is allergic to cats.
You're allergic to cats.
I am allergic to cats, but I also put my love and desire for a cat above my own health and well-being, apparently. So moral of the story is that once we have a bigger house, we're probably going to get a cat. And then just, like, try and keep it out of, like, our clothes so that we can just change before we have to go see your mom.
Kylie is slightly allergic to Bilbo, our dog, and Georgie, our rabbit. She is very allergic to cats.
It's fine.
Oh, boy.
It'll be fine.
I like cats. Don't get me wrong. I just don't like Kylie being a walking snot monster.
Hey, that's uncalled for.
But true.
Well, yeah.
And just big puffy red eyes.
All right, let's move it along, Buster.
Okay, back to the topic. So, yeah, I'm just going to go pretty far out of my element here because this is definitely Kylie's favorite animal.
Yeah.
And I figured doing something kind of different would be fun. And I didn't really even think about that the cat shows had existed in the first place. Like, did you think about that before?
Yes, I am. I am aware that cat shows existed because I'm me. But also, you know that meme that's like cats come in many forms and like there's like a liquid cat that looks like a cat melting in a cage.
Oh, yeah,
and then
yeah,
the
yeah.
super that's those are cats that are like at a cat show.
Oh,
in those,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In case you're ever wanting a visual.
Yeah, because like I always, you know, understood that there were like horse shows and, you know, farm animal shows and obviously like dog shows exist. But for some reason, it never clicked in my head that, yes, there would also be competition shows for cats.
Yes. To the best of my knowledge, I don't think they do like the like agility courses like dogs because like cats have a mind of their own.
And they don't care what
they
we
are,
think.
They are not as trainable, I guess you could say, as dogs. But I think it's more about like breeding and like physical attributes and like looking like.
Yeah, which is a big part of all of these other shows as well.
Right.
But
yeah.
Like, you know, dog shows, they make them do. Well, you know, even dog shows, they just make them run back and forth just to see how they move.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess that is true. They don't do like the. Well, no, they do like those agility courses, don't they?
Not during like the Westminster Kennel Club.
Oh, okay.
Dog show
yeah, no,
all
I guess
stuff.
that is during a different thing.
Yeah.
All right.
So.
Yep.
Kind of the same thing. I just,
yeah.
For some reason, never assumed that there would be cat shows.
Fair enough.
So while this cat show in 1871 is regarded as the first official organized cat show, there are potentially shows that date back as far as 1598 and most likely even further, considering how revered cats were by other cultures, notably Egyptians.
Yep, I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
I could see them being like, this is my beautiful cat. Well, mine's better.
I'm not even sure. Actually, now that I think about it, I'm not even sure that they would do like cat competitions because they revered them as like gods.
God's true.
So to pit them against each other would probably be sacrilegious.
Fair enough. All right. So we just talked ourselves in a circle then.
Maybe. So the major difference that sets the 1871 Crystal Palace Cat Show apart was that there was competitive judging and scoring.
All right.
So that was the first time that people actually scored the cats during cat shows. It was otherwise it was just showing off, oh, this is my cat.
Yeah, that's the kind of show I'd want to do. Just, there's my cat. It's so pretty.
So the scoring was based on a cat's shape, coat length, color, and likely other criteria. These criteria were called the standard of points, and I believe they're still called that today.
I would guess so, yeah.
Yeah. I found that there were a bunch of cat club websites that describe the point system, and I didn't really see one that was generic or held a repository of all cat breeds, so I'm unsure how accurate this is for each, but it seemed to be common between all the websites I found.
Okay.
So the current standard of points seems to be head, ears, eyes and eye color, body, legs and paws, tail, coat condition, and color. Looking at the website for the Burmese Cat Club, the restrictions on the cats seem really detailed as well.
Oh, wow.
Like, for example, when you're scoring a cat's color, if they are a brown Burmese, not only do they have to be brown like a seal, but their nose leather and paw pads must also be brown.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay.
So most of the variations require the nose leather and paw pads to be pink or a variation of pink. But I also saw that there's such thing as a lilac Burmese cat, and its nose leather and paw color are supposed to be lilac.
I need that cat.
Yeah, I've never heard of
I need that cat. That. Jonathan, I need that cat. If I do not get that cat in my lifetime, I'm going to jump off a cliff. I need that cat.
Well, let me tell you a little bit more about them, because they're also, you're going to like this. So their fur needs to be a delicate dove gray with strands of light pink in it.
Oh my God, I'm Googling this cat. I'm Googling this cat.
And just a side note while Kylie Googles, I hate reading, writing, and saying the phrase nose leather. It sounds awful.
Oh my goodness. Look at that kitty cat.
Is it cute?
Yeah. It's like what you would like imagine a Burmese to be, but with like a softer pale gray color.
Mm-hmm.
It's so pretty.
Does it actually have like lilac nose leather? Hate that word.
None of these pictures look like they have lilac nose leather. Yeah, okay, I see why you don't like saying
that. Yeah, it's bad. It's a bad phrase.
It's a bad phrase. Okay, new question. Does the nose leather refer to like their actual nose?
Yeah.
Okay. Because like, you know how Bilbo has that soft spot like right on the tip of his nose?
Well, that's because he's bald for some reason right above his nose. That's not completely normal.
Okay, well, that has half the cat's face cut off. That's a pain. Yeah, I mean, then again, I'm looking at Wikipedia, so like clearly that's not like the best like judge of character. But just looking at the pictures online, it looks like a Burmese cat that's like slightly like paler kind of deal.
Okay. Anyways, back to the Crystal Palace. The cat show was just one of many events happening there that day. The Crystal Palace was being used as an exhibition center for many arts, given that it was happening during the time of the Victorian Naturalist Movement. So for those who don't know, the Naturalist Movement was a time where arts and sciences were celebrated through getting as close to realism as possible through art. So either literature or painting, drawing, sketching, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the inspiration from this came from Charles Darwin, when they were cataloging nature and species exactly as they were, as they traveled around in the HMS Beagle.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of drove an art style to be more scientific sketches.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I knew about realism. I didn't know that it kind of derived from Darwin.
Well, naturalism does.
Well,
realism is a little bit different,
yeah.
Which I was kind of confused by. But
you'd think realism would be the realist trying to look, but whatever.
Yeah, but naturalism is like specifically drawing one animal as like accurately as you possibly can, where I think realism is still kind of about portraits and all
that
stuff.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
Also with naturalism, this is probably what really separated out naturalism and realism, is realism could still be depicting morals or different, you know, you're supposed to get something out of the art.
Right.
Naturalism was supposed to be completely devoid of that and just representing what you were looking at.
Okay, yep.
So due to things being shown exactly as they were seen, this actually led to a very bad reputation for cats as a species.
Hmm.
Currently, we view cats as cold or distant and love that about them. It's part of what people find cute about cats, is that they're so passive-aggressive towards humans.
Uh-huh.
But, and you know, doing their own thing and couldn't be bothered with us liking them kind of makes them a little bit silly, and we like that.
Yeah.
But around this time in England, where everything was very literal, it actually made them view cats as just predators and a utility to have around the outside of the house to prevent your home and fields from being overrun by pests.
Oh, okay.
So they were... Yep. The existence of cats were purely utilitarian back
then. So, like, everyone had their barn cat, no one had a pet cat.
Right, and the barn cat didn't come inside. The barn cat stayed in the barn.
No, the barn cat stayed outside.
And you didn't really go near the barn cat. The barn cat did its thing.
I mean, that's still how barn cats function. Like, generally speaking, like, barn cats are kind of scary.
Yeah, and like, these were, too, because these cats were often, like, run down, muddy, like, matted, brutal hunters. Like, that's how they were viewed, just...
Yep.
These things kill, and they keep our crops safe, and that's all we care about.
Fun.
So cats as pets were very rare at this point in time, obviously, since that was their perception. So that's when Harrison Weir proposed that the Crystal Palace exhibit, that they form a cat show, and the Crystal Palace was kind of skeptical about having a cat show, considering most people just viewed them as predators. But, and they were also like, common enough that it wasn't like, ooh, there's a tiger. Like, it wasn't like a great cat thing. It was like, this is one step above pest because it keeps the pests away.
Fair enough.
So Weir himself was a naturalist as well and already had some clout built in from running bird shows. So they kind of let him do what he wanted to do. Weir was certain that the first cat show would probably not go well due to the many prejudices that he knew people currently held towards the cats.
Fair.
But to Weir's surprise, there were over 150 cats that were registered by their owners to take part in the competition.
Wow.
So there were like a secret society of people that were keeping cats as pets and like making sure that they were like as pristine as possible for the someday future where they might be called on to show off their pristine cats.
That definitely would have been me.
Yeah.
I'd have been like, barn cat, come here, let me love you. I don't care how much you scratch me.
Yep. So there were a few different types of Persian cats that stood out. There was something called a French African breed.
Ooh.
I don't know what that is. I didn't look it up either. I probably should have. But whatever that means. And there was a cat that had six extra claws due to being polydactyl. And like that was, they kind of showed off some oddities as well. Although I guess polydactylism isn't all that uncommon in cats.
No, it's actually really, really frequent, mostly because a lot of the time females are old enough to start breeding before their owners realize they're old enough to start breeding. And like, I know people who were, this has happened before, where like they have several female cats and then they have one male cat and they end up with like 80 kittens.
Yeah.
Because they didn't realize the female was old enough, or they didn't realize that the male was old enough. And the next thing you know, all of your female cats are pregnant and you go,
oh.
Oh.
And then all those cats breed and breed and breed. And
yeah. And like
defects.
I know a lot of the like polydactyl cats is like, you know why they tell you not to marry your first cousin?
So you don't grow an extra finger, apparently.
Well, that and other things. But yeah. So like a lot of polydactyl generally frequently comes from inbreeding between very closely related cats, aka the person that I have in mind. The mother cat ran off, came back, had kittens. They had one male kitten and like five female kittens. That one male kitten got all of the other female cats pregnant.
Yikes.
Including his mother and his sisters.
Yikes.
So
not completely off topic, but when we were looking through those weird laws the other day, I ran into one that said that it is not illegal to marry your first cousin in most states. And I looked at Massachusetts, and it's not illegal to marry a first cousin in Massachusetts.
I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
By that.
I, for some reason, I always thought that that was a thing. I guess it's just societally frowned upon because it's not illegal.
Yeah. Well, I think. I know at one point in time it was like illegal, unless you were nobility, in which case it was very much encouraged.
Right,
got to keep all that money and pedigree within the bloodlines. But I do know there was a period of time, I think in like the early 18th 19th century kind of deal, where it actually was illegal. Or, like, you would be, like, persecuted or something like that. Like,
yeah, I just thought it was
the weird. The mob is going to come get you.
Yeah, oh, geez. So there was also one of the rarest cats at this show, because it was the first time that this cat appeared in England at all. And it was a pair of Siamese cats.
Ooh, so, those are the ones that I'm super allergic to.
Yeah. But they're also like very distinctly colored compared to all cats that are like in England, and like their fur length and coat and all of that is very distinct.
Yeah.
So it was a real special thing that they had not one, but two Siamese cats at the, at this cat show.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. So other than just awarding the most pristine cats due to from this like point system that they had, there was also an award for the fattest cat. So I'd imagine that there's a few more other silly leaning awards as well.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I really hope there's an award for like longest tail or like best tail kind of thing.
They actually probably got deducted points for stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah, because the like tail length was like something that they would like stack up against the other cats. Oh. Like, oh, this breed, its tail length should be approximately here. So if its tail is too long, then that's actually bad.
What about like a fluffy breed of cat with like a super majestically fluffy tail?
I don't know.
I feel like that should get like extra points if you have like a super majestic fluffy cat.
I guess if the cat is known for having a long tail and your tail is the longest, it's like, oh, that's good. But if you have like a long-tailed cat that had a shorter tail, it's, oh, that's bad.
That's probably fair.
That's probably how they judge it. I don't actually know. So Harrison Weir applauded all who were working in the competition because of how difficult it was to ensure that the cats would not escape the cages.
Jeez.
In his book, Our Cats and All About Them, published in 1889, he recounts that he would be walking down the rows of cages and cats would have their paws reaching out trying to turn the latches on the doors.
Yep.
And when they saw him noticing, they would stop, retract their paw, and then keep trying as soon as he was out of eyeshot again.
Uh-huh.
So he would even like stand where he figured out like eyeshot was for like a cage. And he said that there was one specific cat that was just adamant that it was going to get out of the cage. And he would stand where it can see him and it would just watch him. And he would take a single step backwards to be out of line, and immediately he would see the paw come out and try and go for the latch again.
I mean, cats are extremely smart.
Yeah, and if you read this book, the Our Cats and All About Them, he has a preamble, which is like the longest chapter in the entire book.
Oh, good
Lord.
That
is dedicated to just talking about how cats are the superior breed of animal, and that when's the last time you saw a dog try and open a latch and all that stuff. And
that, I mean, fair. Well,
he even went as far as to say that dogs are virtually useless.
Oh, shots fired.
Yeah, this guy really liked cats.
Service dogs are a thing.
Yep.
And like they could be taught very, very smart things. So yep. Anyway.
But part of his argument on that was cats will teach themselves. Dogs need to be taught.
That is true. That's a good point. Because like I know everything that I read about like trying to like potty train your cat like to use the actual toilet instead of like a litter box.
Yep.
Was like, you could encourage it, but like if it didn't want to, it was not going to.
Yeah, it won't happen.
Yeah, it was very much like you can't bribe it or like convince it to do it if it doesn't want to. Kind of like Georgie.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, because one thing that you see with like rabbit owners is like, oh, if you give them a litter box, they'll use the litter box. Like they'll figure it out and they'll do it themselves. And mm-hmm. if they don't want to, they don't want to. And we bought this nice giant cage for Georgie that has one section that specifically detaches from the rest of yep. the sections for easy cleaning.
Yep.
And we put all of her shavings in the entire rest of the place and gave her a bunch of hay and all that spot. And we left the other side empty because she likes to go to the bathroom on like the hard surfaces.
I have no idea why.
Don't She's know weird. Why. But she refused to go to the bathroom there. She would go and sleep there.
Yep.
And go to the bathroom all over her like shavings and hay and everything, which I guess yep. is also kind of common. But we reversed it and put all of her shavings and hay where she was sleeping, and then she would go and go to the bathroom in the other area.
Yeah, so
she just doesn't want to go in that spot and never will.
Yeah, apparently she decided like at the very beginning that that would be where she sleeps, regardless of what's in there, and has not changed her tune.
Yep.
I mean, fine.
So going back a little bit earlier, starting on page 123 of the Our Cats and All About Them book, he starts listing all of what he considered to be the points of excellence. So I did end up finding that eventually.
Ooh.
At least from his point of view, I still never found a modern point of excellence system for breeds of cats that were all together.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was reading it, it looks like he described points of excellence for every cat breed that he mentions in the book, which was about 40 variations of cat color and breed.
Good Lord.
And each one of them had their points of excellence.
Yeah.
So one thing that I learned when skimming through that was at one point he starts talking about how he learned that about every white-haired, blue-eyed cat is deaf.
That I did know.
So I thought that that was just kind of like a medical misunderstanding.
Mm-mm.
And because like it is a long time ago, we didn't really know about anything medical until like the 80s, to be completely honest, like 1980.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume that that was just kind of a fallacy, like maybe he's only experienced that. But like you said, it's true.
Yeah.
And I looked it up and it is called congenital sensorineural deafness.
Mm-hmm.
And cats with white fur and non-blue eyes are 20% likely to be deaf. 40% of white cats with what they call odd eyes, which are different color or like heterochromia eyes, are deaf. And then cats that are white with blue eyes are deaf 85% of the time.
Yeah, it's super common. Like, it's extremely prevalent.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Inbreeding, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bonkers.
Yeah, so the congenital sensorineural deafness is due to them, part of their ear actually degenerates really quickly. So, like, they're not born deaf. They just can't, for some reason, keep that part of their ear functioning.
Huh. Was there any information on, like, how quickly it happens?
I didn't look that far into it. They just said that the degeneration happens fast.
All right. So I might do some digging later.
Okay.
Because I'm curious now.
Yeah. I can't imagine that they would reach adulthood and still be able to hear.
No, I'd probably not.
Just the way that they were talking about the degeneration.
Mm-hmm.
Although the 85% deafness thing is counting deaf in at least one ear. They may not be deaf in both ears, mm-hmm. but 85% of white cats with blue eyes are deaf either in one or both ears.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's a lot of deaf cats.
Yeah, and then the odd-eyed heterochromia thing that I was mentioning before, when those cats are deaf, they are deaf on the side that they have a blue eye.
Interesting. That, yep. I didn't know. But I mean, I guess it makes sense. I wonder if they're...
I don't know why it would make sense.
Well, I mean, because like the
eye color
white
and
cat
hearing?
With blue eyes are deaf. So in my brain, it makes sense that if the cat with two different colored eyes is deaf on one side, then it makes sense to me that it would be the blue side. But... I wonder if there's some sort of like
it's got to be a common gene.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I'm thinking.
There has to be a gene that controls both of those things.
Yeah.
It's just odd that it would be per side.
Yeah. That's weird.
But whatever. So while his statement every white-haired blue-eyed cat is deaf is a stretch, it wasn't that far from the truth. So reading some parts of this book, it's clear that Weir believed himself to be the original cat lover. He has some very classic "sure that happened" moments from the book where he describes people entering his office, just how irate they were that they hated cats and they can't believe that he's going to go through with this exhibit, only for him to very quickly persuade them to show up. And then they would spend every day at the exhibit looking at all the cats. So I'm looking at that as like, yeah, sure that happened,
yeah,
buddy.
Sure.
I don't quite believe you there. That's definitely a biased narrator.
Like the kids that post on Facebook about how like they told their teacher off and stormed
and
out
then
like, the whole
class
left with them or something like that. I'm like,
or the Karens that are just like, I yelled at this guy and his manager came over and everyone smiled and everyone clapped and it's like, no, they didn't.
No, they probably all just stared at you and like walked away in shame.
Yep. So he was very much I would call this guy a cat hipster. He definitely felt he was better than everyone else for his love of cats. And it came through in his writing a lot.
Oh, I bet.
So an interesting note about his book is that in true naturalist fashion, Harrison Weir actually illustrated a different cat every chapter and sometimes every page.
I mean, I see nothing wrong with that.
Yep. But I just thought it was funny that he himself would draw all of the cats in his books.
Was he any good?
Yeah. I mean,
he was
exactly what you would picture like a naturalist doing. Like, if you think about classic, like, how did Charles Darwin draw the finches? Like, it's exactly the same way. Like, just kind of, they're definitely like quick sketches, but they're fairly accurate.
I mean, like, that's still some talent, because, like, I couldn't draw a correct-looking cat if my life depended on it.
I actually find that old art like that is, I feel like it's almost more talented, because they do a lot of shading with singular lines rather than, like, actually shading.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of, like, plan out, like, oh, if light is coming here, I need to draw lines at this angle, this close to each other, to make it look like it's a shadow, and then abrupt stop so that you can see that it's light, and then continue on to get, like, you know, reflections out of singular thin black lines.
Yeah.
So I actually think that's quite talented.
Fair. Yeah. No, I agree.
So back to the show, what was expected to be a quick stop for passerbys ended up gaining a lot more attention than expected.
Yes.
And though I'm not sure which source to believe, I found many sources that cited these two numbers, so I'm assuming that someone accidentally mistyped a number,
okay.
And then a lot of people quoted that source.
Uh-oh, yep.
Because
that's
it could be anywhere.
Happens.
Yeah, it could be anywhere from 20,000 to 200,000 spectators.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it kind of seems like maybe someone accidentally added an extra zero in there. And
or,
then people
benefit
ran
of the doubt,
it.
Dropped a zero. But that seems unlikely.
Yeah, that seems unlikely. Where did this take place again?
Crystal Palace, London.
Oh, I mean, maybe, but
the place had like a bunch of other exhibitions, too. So it wouldn't be unlikely that many people over a weekend or two may have come through.
But they didn't specifically come there for the cat show.
Right. But even just to put it in perspective, for the 20,000 number, that's the same size as the capacity of Madison Square Garden.
All right. That's still a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And this is about 200 years ago. So like, think about like world population and like who would actually be attending that.
Yeah, that's true. That's a pretty, pretty impressive feat, even if it is just the 2,200, 22,000.
Right. 20,000.
20, whatever.
So obviously the cat show ended up being a huge success. And due to this being a surprise to the owner of the Crystal Palace, they decided to give Harrison Weir a gift that was a pint-sized silver tankard to commemorate the great service and suggestion that he provided the Crystal Palace.
So not a porcelain cat statue?
I don't think they were prepared for that. And they probably just had, you know, some fancy stuff hanging around from all the different shows that were there, and they bought him a fancy tankard.
Yeah. You know, it occurs to me that, like, I wonder if, like, this is where all those, like, porcelain cats that, like, grandparents and, like, great-grandparents all seem to have one of.
Well, Harrison Weir is considered the father of cat fancy, which is a term for people who specifically try and groom and breed their cats to be as pretty as possible.
Eventually
there was a magazine that was made called Cat Fancy that only recently ended in like early 2000, I think.
Okay.
That could be wrong, but I'm trying to remember. I didn't write that down because it's just something I glanced over. But he's considered the person who made cats popular again.
Fair enough.
Those porcelain cats could have been started being made from one of any of these Crystal Palace shows.
Yeah.
Because they ended up doing this for over, I only saw up to the 25th year anniversary, but I'm assuming they continued longer than that.
That would probably be a good guess.
Yeah. And in this, after the first cat show, they actually got four more cat shows in within the next 2 years. So
oh, wow.
Like normally you do like for these size events, you do one a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up doing two a year for the first 2 years before they went back to the one a year format.
Wow.
And since this was a place that had a lot of finery around, I could definitely see some of the other vendors starting to tailor towards what was one of their more popular exhibits.
Yeah, definitely. That's really cool.
Yeah. So eventually, Weir became part of, or started, I couldn't figure out which one. I know he was high up in it. a group called the Cat Club, which would eventually be called the National Cat Club.
Mm-hmm.
And he helped run the shows for 20 plus years with this group.
Nice.
Unfortunately, the formality of the Cat Club and the competition ended up being so that most competitors, whenever they get really competitive, drove them to stop caring about the cats and to just care about winning.
Oh, that's not good.
So Harrison Weir ended up breaking from all National Cat Clubs and organizations similar because he was upset with how little people were caring about the health of their animals versus winning the prize.
That's good. You know, I actually like that he broke with them then.
Because
that's definitely...
That was something that I was looking for when I was reading this, because it's like, okay, a lot of these animal shows in general come from a place of just wanting to get money, and there's a lot of abuses that happen in anything that involves animals.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking to find out what happened with this, and it turns out that he broke away from it.
Yeah, that actually makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah. So it caused him to leave the phenomenon that he had, not single-handedly, but a very big hand in starting up, because he believed the focus should be on the animals and not the prizes. The prizes were secondary. The big thing was seeing the cool animals.
I like that.
And I think that's all I got.
All right. That was fun.
Yay.
I love talking about cats.
I know you like talking about cats. I figured this would be a good one. I was debating if I left this for you to do next year. But I'm like, no, I think I want to do a topic that Kylie would normally do.
I like it.
Cool. So let's go to our call to action. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Halfwit History. You can find our website at www.halfwit-history.com. And you can find our Ko-Fi at ko-fi.com/halfwithistory. And you can reach us, if you want to contact us, by Gmail at halfwitpod@gmail.com.
Yeah, if anyone has feedback, comments, topic suggestions, we would absolutely love to hear what you guys want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you to The Fisherman for the use of our theme song, Another Day. You can find their SoundCloud down in our show notes. They have great music, and they are still publishing stuff.
Nice. Fun fact time.
I think it is fun fact time, and it's your turn to start, because I did all the talking.
Woohoo! My fun fact for today, or for this week, is from July 17th, 1762. And it is Catherine II becomes the Tsarina of Russia following the murder of Peter III.
Oh, you like that because you've been watching The Great.
I have been watching The Great and loving it. And if anyone watches it, it is loosely based on fact. Loosely.
Very
loosely.
I use
that in the broadest of terms. Loosely. It does follow Catherine and her, like, rise to power. However, the, like, other characters and, like, events that happened are all, like, played with a lot.
Yeah, and it's definitely meant to be comedic.
Yes, it's very funny and, like, very entertaining. But if you are, like, a Russian historian, it may not be for you.
Yeah, you may get aggravated.
If you enjoy watching shows that are loosely based on history... Go for it.
I think it's so... I didn't get to see all of the episodes with you, but I think it's so clear that it's satire that people who like that kind of stuff would be able to... Or people who like the historical accuracy would probably be able to jive with this as well. Because it's a very clear satire. They're not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes.
Yeah. And, like, the tagline, like, after the, like, the main theme or whatever, it shows the title. It says... The Great. And then at the bottom, it has an asterisk that says, like, a sometimes true story or something
okay.
like that.
They're
so, like,
very
it
upfront.
Very clearly has a disclaimer that's like, we are not claiming this is any reality at all.
Yeah. Okay. I've got a fun fact. On July 18th of 1938, Douglas Wrongway Corrigan arrives in Ireland after a 28-hour flight, supposedly leaving New York, flying for California.
Oh, no. That is definitely the wrong way.
Yeah, there's like an older picture, like a black and white picture of him just kind of like holding his head, like chuckling to himself as he gets off the plane.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's really funny because every time we land at our destination, they're like, we've arrived and blah, 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 blah. And if you weren't planning on ending up here, you should see a ticket agent or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Why do they say that? Now I know.
Well, this guy flew himself.
Oh!
Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't even like he got on like the wrong plane.
No. He piloted himself.
Oh, well, that's just the embarrassing.
Wrong way. Yeah, like, especially because at some point you got to look down and notice that there's ocean and not land.
Yeah, you would think so.
Yeah. Apparently he wasn't paying attention to that.
Maybe he was very involved in the podcast.
No. So anyways, I picked this one because July 18th is my mom's birthday.
Oh.
And because of her, I grew up with Portuguese rights and Portuguese lefts. And Douglas definitely took a Portuguese west when he should have taken a real west.
Yeah.
Well.
Sorry, Z.
Yep.
Not sorry.
Not at all. As always, I've been your halfwit.
And I'm your historian.
And we hope you listen next week.
Bye.